This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I'm back after having a few days off. I was across the country trying to recruit commercial airline service back to the Salem Airport, and we'll talk about that. Hopefully, we'll have some time tomorrow to give you the debrief on how it goes so that we can fly out of Salem and not out of Portland and the drive. However, today we've got a full hour, and glad you're with us. Dave is headed back from being on location, and in the studio, we've got Rob Jackman. You've heard him on KYKN before, and we're going to talk about your money. We're going to talk about investments. We're going to talk about how the markets are being affected by this craziness happening all over the nation and the world, and what we can expect, especially those of us who are savers, and how much money can we make off our savings. A little bit of strategy, a little bit of insider knowledge from an expert. Rob Jackman, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
It's nice to have you. So you have an office, your Jackman Wealth Management, down in the Capital Center downtown.
Right on the corner of State and Liberty, the big, tall, 11-story building in Salem, the skyscraper.
Salem skyscraper, that's right.
People usually say it's the building right next to the Wild Pear, so that's how people identify
it. Everybody knows the Wild Pear. Next to it, there's this tiny little building. And it's got a new paint scheme. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing this?
Well, I've been in the business now for 27 years, but I've been on my own as an independent for, this fall it was 10 years.
Wow.
As an independent, yeah.
10 years. So do you have partners in the business?
I'm part of a financial advisory group. Altogether, there are about 250 people within my network, but I'm on my own with an office manager and an assistant down in my office right now.
Okay. So what would you say is the kind of clients you typically work with?
At the end of the day, there are two types of clients. There are retail clients who are individuals investing their own money, and then there are institutional clients who are responsible for investing the money or overseeing it for others. Primarily, I'm working with individuals, ma and pa, some high net worth, but it's really kind of a wide gamut. But these are people who are investing their life savings. So
maybe somebody who it's changing jobs and they've arrived, or somebody who has been savings and they don't really have a person locally, or they've got a 401k, maybe with an old employer. Would they come talk to you about what do I do with this? What are my options?
Correct. I would say, kind of the bread and butter is somebody who's maybe 3 to 5 years away from retirement.
Oh, really?
And so they've been saving their entire life in their 401k. And, there was a time when their primary decision was investing for the long term, growth, things like that. But I'll tell you, once you retire, now you need to figure out how to turn your retirement account into a lifetime income stream. Mm-hmm. And that's probably 2 to 3 times more difficult than just picking a mutual fund. So that's really where I step in and help people devise a strategy to maximize their income and longevity.
Have you found that we're talking to Rob Jackman of Jackman Wealth Management. Have you found that it's a different expertise and people might need a different advisor from the person who helped them accumulate now that they're going? Because there's two phases, right? We spend our working years accumulating assets and then we're going to distribute them and hopefully live off of them forever.
Absolutely. I mean, my job today is entirely different from earlier in my career. Earlier in my career, I developed and managed a mutual fund for Morgan Stanley. So my job was picking stocks, and I was advising other advisors on where to place their client money. Now it's, I still pick stocks. I still do some stock work. It's in my DNA, but it's really a lot more conservative investments, cash flow management, just making sure people have that monthly income. And the number one concern among the baby boomers is not running out of money. I mean, that's really, if I could throw it against the wall, I mean, I'm here to help you not run out of money.
I saw a study once, and it had to do with Americans and the boomers, and what are you afraid of? And running out of money was higher on the list than death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So death was a little bit further down the list, but still being here and having no money, or maybe that massive Social Security check being your only income is terrifying for people.
And that's a good point. I give seminars around the county on Social Security strategies. And one of the things I'll talk about is, you know, Social Security, it really should only represent about 40% of your pre-retirement or post-retirement, depending on your expenses, but it really should only be about 40% of your cash flow. And when it was created in 1935, the first payment went out in 1940, you know, life expectancies were 62 years. They never anticipated that, you know, where we'd be today, average life expectancy of 85 plus.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think I saw that if a couple makes it to 65, odds are more than 50-50 that one of them is going to see 90. So once you get into a certain age, you didn't die young, right? And then, but the chances are pretty good one of you is going to have to plan for that money to last from to 90 or 95 years.
That's a great point. And it's what you're talking about is the joint probability. Mm. Because individually, a husband or wife might not make, you know, 85 plus, but the probability, like you're saying, that one of the two will make it into their mid-90s, you know, is pretty high.
So how do you do that? There's going to be risk in investments. How do you do that in terms of, you know, if you're retiring and then 2009 hits and you've earned your last dollar, say, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you're 75 years old and you're not going to earn it, and you see the national, you know, market, at least in stocks, go down by like 40%, that's enough to drive people crazy.
Drive people crazy
or
do something more dramatic or drastic. You know, the way I look at it, you know, it really comes down to the strategic allocation heading into that. So if I have a client who's near retirement or at retirement and experienced a loss like that, then I haven't done my job because I don't want to even put them in a position where they could be exposed to that. Now, they're not going to make huge gains on the upside, but they're more concerned about, once again, longevity of their asset base.
We're talking to Rob Jackman, Jackman Wealth Management, and he's taught courses on investment at Willamette. He's taught at Corbin. We have him in today because he just came back from a bond market conference in Boston, and we're going to talk about the bond market, which is going to be really important when the world is talking about negative yields. In other words, you give them $100, but they don't give it all back. Negative yields, and we're talking about China, we're talking about impeachment, all these things that happen, and how does it affect the financial markets? And we're going to get to that. I've got a quick story for you, Rob. This will probably drive you crazy, since it sounds like you work a lot in the distribution phase for your clients. And they going into retirement, and how are we going to make sure it lasts, right?
Correct, yeah.
So my father was in his 80s, mm-hmm. And I'm looking at his portfolio, and of course, as the audience knows, and you just learned, I used to have my financial licenses and what have you, and so I'm looking at him like, Dad, why do you have any risk in this portfolio, mm-hmm. right? And he was like 83 years old, and he had a big chunk of money in international small cap funds, which really it's one of the most volatile things you can put in it. Like, this is just crazy. It should not be this. And, well, that's done well for me. Well, this is one. I'm like, okay. But the point is, what's hard to get a client to do is switch from we want to make money to the switch from getting a return on your money mm-hmm. to getting your money returned, right? Because you don't want to be 83 years old and lose 20, 30, 40, 50% of a portfolio. The return on your money, return on your investments is great, but you also want to make sure that all your money gets returned to you. It doesn't disappear.
Return of capital, not just the return on capital.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a good balance. And it changes when we're 80 versus what we had at 65 and certainly what we had at 45. Fair enough to say?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good. All right. We are going to take a quick early break because we want to come back and talk about some interest rates. We want to talk about interest rates, which are going to affect a lot of people who are retiring, especially if they're going into fixed income investments. And they're going to rely on that interest to help them maintain their lifestyle and not run out of money. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Rob was telling me just before the show, welcome to the studio, Dave, by the way. Dave joins us from being out on location.
Thank you very much.
And he was telling me he's just in the presence of one of those guys that casts the vote on which way America's interest rates are going.
Ooh.
Oh, so we're going to hear about that from Rob Jackman right after this. This is Brent DeHart with Dayborn on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're talking to Rob Jackman. This is really fun for me because it's hard to get an investment person to come talk on the show. Honestly, there's so many regulations, and the regulations mean you need to be compliant, and there's things you can and cannot say. And sometimes it's just so onerous that a lot of people just give up. And so to have Rob willing to come on and talk to us about what he does and some of the things in the marketplace is a great asset. So thank you, Rob, for being here.
Well, you bet I'm a glutton for punishment, too. So.
Okay. Did you bring your compliance department with you?
She's here to keep an eye on me. She's going to hit me on the knee if I say anything I shouldn't. So.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So you recently went to Boston just to attend a conference to talk about a bunch of numbers. I bet that was a great time. I mean, most people want to go see the Red Sox, but no, you're talking about bonds.
there's a lot to do in Boston other than listening to a bond market conference. that would be for sure. I really wanted to go to this conference. It's an annual event, and it's really considered the premier event for the bond market industry. And you had speakers representing the largest bond companies out there. You know, there was a chief investment officer for a company called PIMCO. They manage, I think it's $9 trillion. They're managing money for government, sovereign wealth funds, et cetera. BlackRock, several trillion dollars under management. One of the speakers is one of the four vice chairmen for the Federal Reserve Board. He's one of 17 voting members on interest rates in our economy.
Wow.
So I'm sitting, 15, 20 yards away from this person, hearing what he sees happening with interest rates in the next year or two.
Did you get any insight when they take those votes about whether or not the Fed is going to raise or lower rates? How many of those are unanimous?
That's an interesting question. So where we are right now, I mean, you have people who are dovish, which means they want interest rates to come down. And you have people who are hawkish, which want interest rates to go up. But the interesting thing is there are 12 regional bank presidents who actually set interest rates. Other people are involved in the process, but you really need to look at who's actually casting the votes. And right now, in terms of who's casting the votes, it's more of a dovish constituent rather than people who are not voting but are in the room who want to see rates go up. They're there, but they're not voting. So we have a bias toward lower rates going forward is what I'm trying to say, or what he was saying is what I should say.
Rob, you just prompted a whole bunch of questions. Who wants interest rates to be higher? Who thinks that that's good public policy?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question.
And why?
We're going, internationally in Europe, you have negative interest rates. Mm-hmm. And so, interest rates moving up means that the economy should be or is doing well. So it's kind of like the tail wagging the dog. If interest rates go up, we have a strong and improving economy. So they're just so low right now, and people are just doing absolutely nothing. Interest rates moving up a bit would be a sign of confidence. And that was one thing he talked about, is the Federal Reserve is very, very conscious of behavioral finance and just really what people are thinking out there. And they are fully aware that any decisions they make will not affect the economy for up to 6 months. But they really want to make sure people are feeling confidence out there. And rising rates would show that, hey, if the Federal Reserve is looking to raise rates, their confidence is going up in the economy.
Huh. So somebody like President Trump, who wants to, it's seen as interest rates go down, it's spurring the economy. Like the economy mm-hmm. needs, a shot in the arm. So he likes it to go down so more people feel comfortable borrowing money to invest in infrastructure and equipment and so on and so forth and give a boost to the economy. So Trump gives pressure to lower them, right?
Correct.
So anybody who wants to get Trump reelected would want lower lower interest rates to boost the economy. So he looks good.
Well, to build on that, where we've been for some time, interest rates are so low, nobody's going to say, I don't want to buy this house or this car or this boat, this plane, train, or automobile because interest rates are too high.
Right.
I mean, they, you know, so they're already low and they've been low. And monetary, so what you're talking about is what's called monetary policy. It's really not having an effect at all. You know, you can, people are not going to make decisions based on rates going from 1.5% to 1.25%. So
does it push, and maybe we're diving too into sideways to things you wanted to talk about, but I was wondering if it does make a difference in deciding if Ford decides to build a billion-dollar plant, because you know then you're talking about financing $1 billion in a bond market and how much they're going to have to pay out to investors. Is that more of the market that really gets affected by it than you know your standard investor?
Well, what you're talking about there is a little different. So the Treasury market is considered our Treasury market is the risk-free market in the world, and whenever you're looking at bonds, you want to look at what the extra interest rate a company is paying or what you as an investor are earning above a risk-free treasury. And Ford, you know, when you mentioned Ford, Ford is actually a fairly high-risk company today. So they would be more vulnerable to or to interest rate movements, and they would benefit if their cost of funds comes down in relation to that. But, yeah, so that's, you know, these are the types of things that you're looking at.
So what did you come away with at the conference that was a surprise to you?
Well, so today, believe it or not, there are $17 trillion of bonds paying negative interest rates in this world. To put it into perspective, in the country of Sweden, you have to buy a bond greater than 50 years to earn a positive rate of interest.
Wow.
The country of Austria, you know, this AAA rated, you know, premier country, Austria just issued a 100-year bond, and that was the first time they could actually get a positive interest rate, or an investor could earn a positive interest rate, is buying a 100-year bond.
I'm going to have to ask the obvious question. We're talking to Rob Jackman of Jackman Wealth Management, with the offices right here downtown Salem. Why does anybody buy something that's not going to return the money they put into it? Who's buying that?
Yeah, and I get this question all the time, and so really what it comes down to, there are a lot of regulation or institutional biases. If you're an insurance company, an annuity company, a bank, a trust company, et cetera, either by your prospectus or by your investment policy statement, you are required per your fiduciary duty to keep money in AAA bonds. So it's not like these people, you know, fell off the turnip truck. I mean, they know what's going on. But the thing is, they have to do that, and they can't take $5 trillion and just put it in their vault in terms of euros or dollars. So you know they have to buy these.
Well, and we don't have them in America just yet. We don't, but there's talk like it may happen to us. But right now, wouldn't you think of a lot of money would flow to the U.S. market, because at least we have a positive bond market.
Right, and it's funny you said it, because yeah, we are definitely one of the highest yielding countries out there. I mean, Greece's bonds, the country of Greece, their bond yields are below the U.S. And wasn't this a country that was going to default not that long ago? So really, what's happening though, as much as anything, is money flowing into our bond market, and that was one of the things that was discussed, has caused our dollar to be, the dollar is probably about 10% overvalued right now. But I'll tell you, the most, definitely the most uncomfortable presentation I saw at this, speaker I saw at this event, possibly one of the most uncomfortable I've ever seen. There was a lady who was speaking. She manages a global bond fund. So she's talking to a room of professional bond fund managers, trying to explain the benefit of investing in her fund, paying a negative interest rate. And the room was very quiet.
Wow.
And I'm sure when she was asked to come present, rates weren't where they were. But so basically her thesis was, okay, in Germany, interest rates are negative 0.5. And the incremental return you would earn on a, let's say, a BMW bond would be 1% above that. So you go from negative 0.5 to 0.5. And if the dollar depreciates, you might get an extra 2% if there's a policy error. So you're sitting here scratching your head going, okay, so if we have a policy error, the dollar depreciates, and I'm getting an extra 0.5% on a negative yielding bond, I might make 2.5%.
Wow.
Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it was very quiet, and there was a lot of people on their iPhones and smartphones, et cetera, during her presentation.
Not every presentation could be a winner.
Right.
That is crazy. So what's causing that? Is it political unrest? Is it something that is structurally deficient in their economies that we need to watch out for? What's causing that? We've never seen this before.
Well, Europe, especially Europe, they've never really recovered from the Great Recession. And they have structural issues in terms of employment regulations, unemployment, things of that nature that are structural impediments to hiring and firing, things like that. But to just think, what was it, back in 1980, a 10-year United States Treasury bond was paying over 15% in 1980. Today we're down to about 1.7, 1.8% in that amount of time. And what was interesting too, one of the speakers was talking about the history of interest rates. You know, people who've been around for a while, I mean, they're accustomed to, okay, bonds pay 6, 8, 9%, something like that. But she showed a history of interest rates going back to 1800 through present. And when you look at it, it was only in the late 70s, 80s when interest rates just went to the moon.
Right.
She showed that between the late 1880s and the late 1920s, for 40 years, interest rates were below 4%. From the late 1930s through the late 1950s, they were below 3%. So, you know, this whole, you know, phenomenon, you know, 8%, 9% safe bonds was really just a function of that period of time.
Well, and of course, that was in the Carter years, and we were looking at 19% borrowing for your house on mortgages.
Yeah.
So all of you that are saying or complaining about your 4.25 and you wish you could get lower, you know, a little bit of historical perspective is pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Okay, so how much you said just before we go to break, you said Treasury is a risk, Treasury notes are a risk-free market. Is there a place for those U.S. government bonds and bills to be in your clients' portfolios? And
well,
if so, what percentage?
Okay, so the whole playbook is changing. I was on a conference call last night about this very topic, and really the argument was made that you really need to look at bonds going forward, not for income, but just for stability of your account.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of a total return, reinvesting your income, generating income, that's not out there. A junk bond today in our country is paying around 5%. So back in 2007, a money market was paying 5%. So you're buying a portfolio of bonds that could very likely default to make 5%.
Wow.
So that's where things are today.
So you used to have no risk to make 5, and now you have to take considerable risk to make 5.
Correct.
And a lot of people that had the money in the stock market, which of course you deal with all the time as well, they made nothing maybe for 10 years with a couple of recessions in the 2000s. So,
wow,
a lot to think about. We're going to have to take a break and come back, but he's going to stick with us another segment, all right? So we got Rob Jackman of Jackman Wealth Management at the Capitol Tower here in Salem, and we're talking about bonds and your money, and we're going to come back and talk about, I'll ask him some pointed questions about what you should do preparing for retirement. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. Great supporter of the Newsmakers program here. Hey, before we get back to Rob, this Saturday, November 2nd at 9:30 is the American Roots Music Festival. It's going on at the Tabernacle in Turner, and I have two free tickets.
Free is a good price.
That's right. Free is a good price. To the first caller, 503-393-1430. That's 503-393-1430. Two tickets to the American Roots Music Festival this Saturday in Turner. Good luck.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Brent DeHart here, and I'm talking to Rob Jackman, Jackman Wealth Management. And let me ask a few questions I think a lot of listeners are asking if they've been sticking with us through the hour. How does a person like yourself get compensated for helping your clients?
Okay. Well, I work as an advisor rather than a broker. So I'm not charging commissions on a transactional sort of basis. I'm charging a client a fee for financial planning, investment management, portfolio rebalancing, you know, a whole suite of products and services.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you know, we used to get those questions a lot, and it's hard for people to understand. And there are different models in terms of how advisors do get paid. So,
and just to build on that too. So, really, my clients look to me as a consultant. So, I have clients sometimes call me when they're looking to buy a new home, and they're talking to a mortgage broker, buying a new car, talking about their children's college education. I mean, anything financially related is all part of my service as a consultant to my clients.
I also found that people, they like to have their money build, but they don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about it. And that's kind of the value of an advisor. We get it all the time. And in this day and age where everyone thinks they can grab a cell phone and become an investment expert, right? Well, I've got this app and it's an expert. Well, yeah, not so much. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, people like to either fish or garden or golf or go to the beach and surf, whatever it is. You want to be doing those things instead of focusing on your investments, and you hire somebody like Rob Jackman to do it for you.
Well, there's a funny, I've been, you know, my 27 years, I worked for Charles Schwab for a number of years. My first few years, I was in a call center. And I remember a person called me up. I could tell he was on a subway or something like that. And he wanted to take his whole retirement account, let's say it's $100,000, and invested in this stock. And the market's about ready to close. He's panicking. He's short of breath. And so I buy it. And then he says, could you tell me what they do?
Oh my gosh. I said,
you just put your life savings in this stock and you don't know what they do? And he said, no, I see a couple of Wall Street looking guys on the subway in front of me. So I figured if they're talking about it, it must be good. And you would be amazed how often I've seen things like that through my career.
Oh, my gosh. What a story. Let me hit you with a few questions here.
Sure.
Somebody comes to you and says, hey, you know, I've got this debt. Maybe it's a house. Maybe it's consumer debt. Should I be paying off the debt or should I be investing? Should I be saving or reducing my debt?
Well, okay. So, you know, it's going to be dependent on, you know, the interest rate. And one of the things, too, on that, though, I have learned through the years, it's very important for me to make sure clients, prospects, whoever, they understand the concept of an emergency reserve. You know, that they have 3 to 6 months of just cash sitting there that's available to them if they need it for something. So before they start looking to pay off debt, I'll make sure they have liquidity. Because what you don't want to see is somebody who's paying off debt and then all of a sudden they lose a job or something happens and now they're having to hit a retirement account and paying 10% penalties and taxes to get money to take care of this. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing, though, with just rates being as low as they are, you know, if you have a, you know, 4% mortgage, inflation's 2%, your cost of funds is really only 2%. So you've really got to say, could I make more than 2% after inflation out there doing something? So,
mm-hmm. All right. So it's an individual case. I used to tell them it's not an either or. Let's see if we can get you in the habit of both. And okay. So, paying down debt, that's a Dave Ramsey thing. He preaches that. He also likes people to have an emergency reserve, like you're talking about. Great advice. How much, when we see these Dave Ramsey on the radio or his books, we see Cramer on the television, all these people that are media investment people, how much are they getting right? You know, how much should people really trust in what they're doing?
Okay, well, that's an interesting question. So Dave Ramsey, I'm familiar with his work. I've actually been asked to teach some of the segments of the Dave Ramsey program. And so I believe there are maybe 12 different talking points that he really focuses on. And this is just my experience, how I feel. I could be right or wrong, and I'm frequently wrong. But there's
just not with investments.
Right. No. Hopefully not. Or hopefully not too often. But my favorite Dave Ramsey talking point is his budget and the debt snowball. Those are two of my favorites. The one I really kind of raise my eyebrows on, he makes it sound very easy to make 12% of the stock market. And, well, you know, stocks have averaged 10% going back to, 1926, but it's not like just, you know, walking through the park and making 12%. He's a little, in my mind anyway, a little light on how easy that is to do. But he has some really good things to say, and I respect him and appreciate what he does.
So should people, you know, sign up for the Motley Fool? That's what it's called, right? Isn't that great? And it seems like they're always telling you something to put money in. They're telling you to put money in this. Telling you to put a person go crazy, and it's like your guy in the subway. You don't really know, except a talking head on the television is telling you to do this. You have no relationship with them. It just sounds like more akin to gambling than it is investing with a plan.
Well, and you need to remember with the talking heads, there could be 100 people who are a subject matter expert in a topic. And CNBC, CNN, whoever, they're going to bring the most extreme on the ends onto the show because they're trying to get people to stick and watch the show. They're not there to give financial advice. So you're getting the extreme views, not the middle of the road.
That is an excellent point. It is so true, isn't it? They hope they yell at each other and contradict each other. Right. That makes for good TV, but it doesn't make for good financial advice.
No.
So you can have this one. I got one for you. When you're talking with my clients, I always just tell them, you know, when you watch those things or you read a magazine or the newspaper financial page, every article appeals to either your greed or your fear.
Correct. Yeah.
There's nothing in between. There's no rational, well, let me build a personal plan for you advice. That would be Rob Jackman, Jackman Wealth Management. Mm-hmm. But it does. They want to appeal on the segments for your greed. You're missing out because you could be making more, or your fear. Oh my gosh, you're going to lose, you know, those kinds of things. And pretty much sometimes you see them on the same page.
Well, one of the things I've learned through the years is if somebody tells me they're aggressive, they're probably moderate. And if they tell me they're moderate, they're probably conservative. Another story I have is I remember this one person. This is a little while back. He's probably 50 at the time. He picked up the phone, called me, and he couldn't tell me enough how aggressive he was. I mean, he just wanted to just go for it. So he comes in, and I give him one of these standard risk tolerance questionnaires, and he scored like maybe a 90-year-old retiree. I mean, wanted no risk with his money. And so I'm going, well, something is not right here. And it winds up that he was a bungee cord jumper and a skydiver. So he equated jumping out of a plane with the ups and downs of the stock market, but that's not really how he felt, and he didn't know that. So a lot of my job is education.
With all this talk with the presidential politics and China and things like that, should we be worried about the market or no more than usual?
No more than usual. You know, this conference call is on last night. It was interesting. It was showing conditions going back to 2000, and it's showing Republicans leading Republican, Democrats leading Democrat, and it showed their sentiment and on current conditions. And it was interesting how when Obama was president, all the Democrats were optimistic, Republicans were not. Trump becomes president, it turns the other way. When Bush was president, Republicans were optimistic. But the thing is, if you were a Democrat and you got out of the market because of Trump, you've lost out. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Republican and you got out of the market when Obama was president, you lost out. So the message was, don't let your politics influence your investment decisions.
Good one.
Wow.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right, so this got to be a question you get all the time, especially if you're dealing with people approaching retirement, is when do they take Social Security? And is there one answer?
I can tell you exactly what the answer is. Social Security, and when I talk about it, I'll always ask for people to raise their hand. I'll say, how many people here believe that Social Security is the best investment in America? And I say, you can't look at your neighbor. You just have to look ahead and raise your hand or not. Well, of course, nobody will raise their hand. And I will tell them, Social Security is the best investment today in America. And the reason is, between age 62, when you can begin, and age 70, you're getting an 8% delayed retirement credit every year you don't take it, plus inflation. So you're getting 8% inflation, too. You're getting a 10% raise every year, guaranteed. And where are you going to get 10% guaranteed out there today? Oh, Turkey is paying 14%, but that's not guaranteed. And so, and it's not correlated. It doesn't move up and down with the stock market. So it is an outstanding event. When Social Security was created, they never anticipated that interest rates were going to go to 1.5%. So it is an outstanding investment. The only problem is only 3% of the population waits until age 70 to do it because mm-hmm. people, for whatever need, you know, they need the cash before that. But no, Social Security, I always say wait until 70 if you can.
Wait if you can. Good return on your investment right there. Wait if you can.
So I'll still be working here then at 70.
Dave Ford will be right here when he's 70.
He'll be a youngster. I'm going to be working until I'm 85, I hope.
Yeah. I always joke that I'm going to be working until I'm dead. So.
Sure.
All right. We're going to have to take our last break. We're going to come back with Sergeant Mike and Cowboy Bob.
Cowboy Ron.
Cowboy Ron.
Cowboy Bob, I don't know where you get that.
Cartoon or something.
Yeah.
We want to thank Rob Jackman for being here, and I hope he comes back.
Yeah.
Jackman Wealth Management. If you have any questions, I'm sure they'd welcome a call. They're there on State Street in the Capitol Tower. You can't miss them. And, gosh, I love the fact that you're not only increasing other people's education at Willamette and Corbin, but you're also increasing your own, having just spent some time in Boston just to listen to people drone on about interest rates. That is pretty. That's a commitment to your craft, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're going to come right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and it's Thursday, and we're finishing up our hour with Sergeant Mike. And, Mike, I got to tell you something. Mike's the boss man around here, in case
he
you guys haven't figured that out.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about him and KYKN in general is that they're supportive of the local economy. They're supportive of local small business. They're supportive of our community, which is really great. So I wanted to say that on the record out loud. They're supportive of our drive to recruit commercial air service to Salem and recognize what it means.
Absolutely.
To. And, of course, as we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks, supportive of our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And want to honor those. Before we get to any politics or something, you're going all out this year for Veterans, quote unquote, Day. You're making it a week.
Yeah. You know, over the past few years, we've done Veterans Day, and there were other opportunities where we could do other things, but it just never quite got connected together. This year, me and Chris Link got, at the end of last year, we started talking about this year so we could plan things, and we couldn't think of a better name than Veterans Week. And we're going to be at four different locations from the 4th of November, and the last day is the 11th of November. We'll be somewhere every day except for one day in the middle, talking about weekdays. And it's given us, we're going to be in Dallas. We're going to be in Salem at Sportsman's Warehouse. We're going to be all over the place at the new place out there,
Boone Ridge.
Yep, and we'll be talking with veterans, about veterans. We'll be on, and Newsmakers will be on the road, right?
That's right.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you say that so many families, if you mention cancer, any decent-sized family, they've got a member or a close family friend that's been touched by this. And when you talk about veterans and people who have served, it's hard to find any decent-sized family that doesn't have a family member or some a close friend of the family that has been a veteran, has been touched by, you know, serving in our armed services. So, yeah, it's a huge population and so critically important. So thanks for that.
Sure, I love it.
Speaking of those who serve, the Commander-in-Chief, he hasn't started wearing a uniform yet, but Mr. Trump, he's embroiled in conflict.
You know, I think he forever will be, and I think he always has been. He is a real newsmaker.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing politics that I've never seen strike as quickly and as aggressively as this is. And I've been through Nixon, I was, you know, with Bill Clinton and all this and that. But this is, frankly, it's just shocking to me that they want him out.
Yeah.
And this, the aggression and whatever it takes, they're doing that. Facts be damned.
So, Sergeant Mike, you've been around, you've seen a few things. This is new. But would you lay a bet on it, whether or not he's going to be removed from office? Would you throw some of your coinage down on the table and lay a bet?
Yes.
Okay, and the answer is?
I don't think he will be, but I think he's going to have, this is going to work against him for re-election. I think that's where it's going to make a difference. I don't think they have enough facts, but same time, I've been thinking that for 2 years, 3 years. I don't think our system would absorb. They've got to go through the Senate and get an approval there, and I don't believe that is going to happen.
As it goes closer into the election year and throughout the election year, do you think, Sergeant Mike, that this is going to be more of a distraction to the Congress people or more of a distraction for the president as she's trying to seek re-election? You know what I mean? Is that part of we're going to drain your resources and your time focused on being removed so you can't campaign? Or is America going to rise up and say, are you kidding me? Are you going to spend all 4 years doing this? What's going to get hurt more?
I think a couple of things. One, the filling of the time with energy, like you said, is critical. He can only fight so long. He's got to do his job. What I'm seeing throughout America is the Republicans in the House of Representatives are getting out, a lot of them.
Including Greg Walden, we learned this week.
You bet. And I don't think Greg's getting out because he's afraid of something, because he would have gotten reelected. I don't think it's very much fun being in a minority in there. But he is an effective congressperson, and very much so. But I see a whole lot of people wanting not to be there, thinking that this is going to be tough to be a Republican in Congress over the next few years.
Do you think he just gave up on it or decided just to retire? I'm tired of fighting with them all the time.
Greg is a well...
I know Greg, so...
He's a well-planned individual.
Yeah.
He doesn't make moves off the cuff. He's just in this, for example. He said, hey, in a year and a half, I'm going to be done. Mm-hmm. He's a thinker. Yeah. And a planner. So I don't think he's reacting necessarily. I think a lot of them are.
Yeah.
You know.
That's funny. We should have like Vegas odds. You can bet on anything in Vegas, right?
Pretty much.
But can you bet on will President Trump be impeached? And then if so, will he be removed from office by the Senate? And if not, will he still get reelected?
You know those are probably up right? in Vegas right now.
It's got to be something. You can bet, you know what, on the Super Bowl, how many,
exactly.
How many yards the kickoff is going to go. Mm-hmm. Crazy things like that.
I feel, though, that this witch hunt that they're doing for President Trump, if you've seen his rallies, they're huge. People are coming up and supporting, and I think that America is getting tired of what the Democrats are doing.
Half of America is.
Yeah, at least half of America, and they're going to feel the backlash in come re-election time for them in Congress. I think so. Do you feel that way?
I think we're going to see it before. I think you're going to see a backlash before Election Day next year. I believe that people are going to be very angry and they're going to come out in the hordes, but we're going to be continually polarized.
Mm. All right, that's not the least we're going to hear of that. Thanks for being here for Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morn. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.